We're doing Tanya 200. We're celebrating the 200th anniversary since the first printing of the Hasidic classic, the Tanya. We're up to chapter 16, and the last thing we covered was the distinction between two kinds of Beinoni, the Beinoni being the person who is neither a saint nor a sinner, who always behaves properly, but has a struggle, a duality in the heart, where the love and the fear are not always exclusively godly, but also human and flawed. The two kinds of Beinoni are described in the Talmud as the one who serves and the one who does not serve. They both behave perfectly. They both will never fail to fulfill a positive commandment that they're capable of fulfilling, and they both will not transgress any of the commandments or the prohibitions, not in thought, speech, or in action. However, one of them is called the one who does not serve, because in doing all that he does, in fulfilling all the commandments and avoiding all the sins, he doesn't have to struggle. It's not a present, ongoing struggle to serve God, and therefore he's not described as one who serves in the present tense, active sense. And the reason he doesn't serve might be because of his personality, that he has a very studious personality, and therefore doing mitzvahs comes easily to him, including the mitzvah of studying Torah, because he likes to sit and study. And avoiding sin, not transgressing, also comes easily to him because he's a dispassionate person by nature. And so although he is devoted and committed and perfect in his behavior, it can't be described as serving because there's no effort necessary, or at least not any major effort. There's a natural, inborn love that comes from his godly soul, and that motivates him, that gives him the energy to fulfill all the commandments and avoid all the prohibitions. But that love is inborn, not to his own credit, and so he can't be described as one who is serving. Another possibility is that he was originally one who serves. It took a lot of work for him to get to where he is now, where he studies diligently and fulfills all the commandments and avoids all the prohibitions, never sins. He did serve, and that came with great personal effort. But now, it has all become second nature. So now he's no longer serving. It's his habit to study and review his lessons 100 times. That comes easily. If he wanted to review the lesson 101 times, that would be an effort, then he would be serving. But if he stays at the plateau, what that has become comfortable and habitual, then he is described as one who does not serve. So the service is now defined not by how much you accomplish, but by how much effort you put in. So if studying or reviewing a lesson 100 times comes naturally because of second nature, then studying the one additional time, 101, although it's only one time more, yet that is more precious, more significant in terms of service than the first 100. In order to serve properly, you have to arouse a feeling of love for God to motivate the performance of the commandments, and a fear of God to motivate the resistance or the avoidance of sin. Now, this can be done in one of two ways. The original, most impressive way is to study godliness, to understand God to such a degree that the understanding will actually produce a full-fledged emotion in the heart, a love, a love or a fear that is felt, tangible in the heart, or what is called a fiery love. To do that, you have to understand God. You have to think deeply, dwell intensely on the greatness of God, until that knowledge has become so real that it affects the heart, and the heart responds with an actual palpable emotion of love or fear, and that's what motivates the doing of the commandments. Another possibility is that the natural love that is inborn in the soul, although you don't get credit for it as it is, but if you do something to arouse that love, so you're not giving birth to a new emotion, but you're arousing the love and the fear that is natural and native to the soul, and that also takes some work and some effort on the part of the Beinoni. If he does that, that too is considered service. But if he's getting by on the natural love as it remains undeveloped or unexcited in the soul, then it's not called serving. That's chapter 15. Now, in chapter 16, the Rebbe says, this is a major principle in the service of God for a person who is a Beinoni. And that is that although we're talking about arousing the love and the fear, the emotions of the heart, in order to serve God, we shouldn't think that the objective, the ultimate, is the love that will be aroused and the degree or the intensity of that love. Instead, for the Beinoni, the essence of his service consists of the effort and the struggle, not the love that it produces. In other words, there is the godly soul that is capable of love and fear of God, and there is the animal soul that is busy with a love and a fear of its own. In the struggle, the Beinoni overcomes the distractions of the animal soul's emotions and gets even the animal soul to behave the way the godly soul wants. In doing this, the animal soul, the natural soul, is mellowed, is weakened, is subdued, and drafted into the service of God, at least in terms of its garments, thought, speech, and action. And it's this overcoming or mellowing of the human soul that is the essence of the service of the Beinoni. In other words, God puts the Beinoni into this predicament where he has a duality of souls and a duality of emotions, where his heart is drawn in two directions, not so that he will love God intensely, but that he will overcome and subdue the distractions of the natural soul and harness the natural soul to serve God as well. That's the essence. So the Beinoni need not wonder, why struggle? What is the point? The tzaddik loves God with all his heart, with all his soul, with all his might, and doesn't struggle. So if the objective is to love God with all your heart, why put anyone in such a predicament where you have to struggle in order to do what others can do without a struggle? And then will the love ever be equal to the love that the tzaddik has? So the Rebbe says, chapter 16, the main thing is the effect you're having on your natural soul, not the love that you can produce from your godly soul. That's the job of the Beinoni. Another important thing that a Beinoni must know is that if he finds that he doesn't have the kind of intelligence, the ability to understand the abstract ideas of God's greatness, how God fills the world, transcends the world, and all of existence is like nothing to God, even if he doesn't understand this to such a degree, so graphically, that it can produce for him a love and a fear that is felt in the heart, or what he calls the revealed part of the heart, in other words, an actual full-fledged emotion, even so, he can serve God properly by arriving at a conviction in the heart. There are times when what we know will arouse us to great emotion. And the more you think about the subject, the more excited you become. And the excitement is actually felt in the revealed part of the heart. Your heart actually beats differently because of the emotion. For that, the knowledge, the subject, has to be very real and very tangible. But there are times when you don't have that kind of intelligence. The subject is not that close or that graphic that it can arouse that kind of an emotion that actually beats and pounds in the heart, a fiery emotion. What does happen, though, is that your knowledge and your understanding of the subject brings you to a conviction. You don't actually love, you don't actually yearn, but you are convinced, not only in your mind, but even in your heart. The conviction reaches the heart that this is what I ought to do. I ought to yearn for this. I ought to be loving this. That conviction motivates behavior. In other words, there are things you will do because of this conviction that you wouldn't otherwise do, which means that it takes you beyond your natural habits. And this, the Rebbe says, is a legitimate, full-fledged service of God. You are serving God with your heart, even though it's not the aroused emotion of the heart. It is only a conviction of the heart. But a conviction of the heart is energizing and produces behavior that wouldn't otherwise be. So, for example, the nature of the godly soul is that it desires to free itself of the body, to free itself of the restraints of the physical, and return to wherever souls come from, to go back to being a soul disembodied, free of the restrictions of a physical body. When a person thinks about the greatness of God, that desire becomes very intense in the soul, and it wants to expire, kleis ha-nefesh, it wants to expire and lose itself and be merged into godliness. But it can't. It's sent to earth, it's born into the body for a purpose and for a reason, and it doesn't have the freedom. It doesn't have the permission to leave the body and go back to heaven. Now, that's when the understanding and the wisdom is so clear and so vivid that the soul actually feels that yearning and that desire to expire. But when you have a conviction in the heart, it's not a full-fledged emotion. The heart is not pounding with excitement. But the heart, in addition to the mind, has been moved with a conviction that it ought to want to cleave to God. It ought to desire the freedom from the body, and it ought to expire into godliness. How do you connect to God when you can't leave the body? The only way to do that is by doing the mitzvah, by keeping the commandments. Since the commandments are very dear to God, very close to God's essence, when you immerse yourself in a mitzvah, when you commit yourself to the commandment, when you surround yourself with the commandments, you are cleaving to that which is essential and precious to God, and that brings you closer to God even while you're still in the body. So when a person has only the conviction, it motivates him to fulfill the mitzvahs in a way that he would not had he not had the conviction. Now the Zohar says that when you fulfill a mitzvah, any commandment that we observe, it should be observed with the feelings, the emotions of love and fear. The Zohar uses the expression wings. Every mitzvah needs wings to be able to rise upwards, to fly like a bird. It needs two wings. One wing doesn't work. What are the two wings? The right and the left. The right side is love, the left side is fear. So every mitzvah needs to be fulfilled with both love and fear. If it's a positive mitzvah, the love is the dominant emotion, and there's a little bit of fear or awe that comes with it. In resisting that which is forbidden, the dominant emotion is fear, humility, awe, but there's a little bit of love that goes with it that motivates the desire to keep the commandment in order to get closer to God. Now these two wings help the mitzvah rise to a higher plane, to a higher level, a higher world than it would otherwise. So a mitzvah without kavana, the Zohar says, is like a bird without wings. It's a living thing, it's a precious thing, but it can't rise. So a mitzvah fulfilled without love and fear is valid, it's living, it's precious, but it doesn't have the ability to rise to where it's supposed to be. Now, the sages say, Machshava Teva HaKadosh Baruch Hu Metzarfa L'maisa, that a good intention, when a person has a good intention, he meant to fulfill the commandment, he wanted to observe the mitzvah, but for some reason didn't. The sages say that God connects the intention with the act, and you are given credit as if you had fulfilled the commandment. In Tanya, every word of Torah is examined precisely and exactly, and the Rebbe has a problem with this expression in the Talmud. What does it mean, God connects the thought to the action? If it means to say that you are given credit for your intentions, then it should say so. It should say the thought is rewarded like an action. What does it mean it's connected to an action? God connects the thought to the action. That's a strange expression. So the Rebbe understands it on a deeper level. Thought here refers to conviction. The difference between thought and wisdom. Wisdom means you really understand the subject, and what happens is you produce an actual emotion in the heart that is palpable and intense and fiery. And that emotion, being that the heart is closer to action than the mind, the emotion of the heart animates the action and turns it into a living mitzvah. It gives it wings to fly with. But intellect, the knowledge itself that stirs the emotion, the knowledge itself does not directly permeate the action to give the action life. So although it's because of the understanding and the knowledge that the behavior proceeds, but the distance between the concept and the action is too far, and the action remains dry or lifeless, even as it is produced by the intellect. So when you know you ought to do something, and there is no emotion involved, you will do what you know you should do, but it's going to be a sterile, dry performance. What animates behavior, what animates action, is the emotion, because the emotions of the heart are closer, more similar to action. They're action-oriented, whereas intellect is abstract and removed. Also, intellect is cold. It's objective and disinterested. So it can't animate, it can't excite the action because it's not excited itself. Emotions, of course, are excited, are intense. And so the emotion is what gives the behavior or the action the energy or the enthusiasm that makes it buoyant, that gives it the wings to fly. So the question now is, if you don't have an actual emotion, if your mind can't produce an intense, palpable emotion in the revealed part of the heart, what it produces instead is a conviction of the heart, which is described as the recesses of the heart. The non-active part of the heart, but still the heart, not the mind. So there is some enthusiasm there because it is an emotion, only it's an emotional conviction rather than an emotional explosion. Now, can that conviction, even though it is of the heart, can it permeate the act and turn the act into a living mitzvah and give it the wings with which to fly? Concerning this, the sages say that if you have a good thought, not in the mind, but in the heart, if you have a conviction in the heart, even though it's not a full-fledged emotion, God will connect that conviction to the action that follows from it. Although they're somewhat removed, because this isn't a palpable emotion, which would have a palpable effect on your action, yet God connects that thought, that conviction, to the act. And so having a conviction that motivates the behavior, it also animates the behavior. Maybe not as intensely, maybe not as thoroughly as an actual emotion, but it is enough to give the mitzvah wings so that it can rise and be a living mitzvah. So what is all this telling us? Right at the beginning of Tanya, in fact, before chapter 1 even, in the introduction, the Rebbe asks, how are we to understand the statement that Moses makes to the Jewish people, where he says, the service of God is very close to you, in your mouth and in your heart to do. Moshe is trying to encourage the relationship with God, and although it might seem impossible, humanly impossible, to get close to God, to be connected to God, and so on, Moshe assures them that it is not in heaven, that you have to go up to heaven, and it is not on the other side of the ocean where you have to cross the ocean. It is very close to you, in your mouth and in your heart to do. The Rebbe's question is, it's very close to do. Of course, everyone can do a mitzvah. Everyone can put on tefillin. Everyone can give charity. Everyone can say the prayer or the blessing. So in doing, it's close. But in the heart, in the mouth, and in your heart to do, in other words, to serve God with your heart, is very close? It doesn't seem to be. The heart, certainly of the Beinoni, is not inclined to love God or to fear God. It has other emotions that it's preoccupied with. So what does it mean that it's close to your heart to serve God. So in chapter 16, the Rebbe is starting to answer that question. And that is, that even if you don't have a knowledge of God that is so real, so thorough, so tangible, that it can arouse an actual love and fear of God in your heart, not in your godly soul, in your heart, in the physical heart. Even if you can't do that, your service of God is not doomed. You're not excluded from serving God with your heart, because if you can produce a conviction in the heart, that too is serving God with love and fear. That also is the service of the heart. So that even if your knowledge of God is limited, and what you produce from all your studies and from all your efforts, not for lack of effort, but for all your efforts, you cannot produce an active love in the revealed part of the heart, you can still serve God with the heart by producing, by arousing a conviction of the heart. This is sometimes called the wisdom of the heart. There's wisdom in the mind, and there's wisdom in the heart. When what the mind knows becomes a conviction in the heart, this is called wisdom of the heart. Binas Halev, the understanding of the heart. And that too is a full-fledged service of God. That's what Moshe meant when he said, it is close to you, even if you're not a genius, and even if you're not the greatest scholar in theology and in godly subjects, it is still close to you. You can still serve God with your heart by the wisdom of the heart, by producing a conviction that God should be served, and that every soul should yearn for God.